Hello and welcome to a three-inning save podcast. No three-inning saves in spring training yet, but so should we become the tie podcast? we can become the tie podcast for the month of whatever we're in, February and March.
Yeah.
And we'll wear ties. No one will ever see it. Maybe we can take pictures and put up.
Nope.
No. Nope.
I refuse to have my picture taken with a tie. No, I'm just kidding. That's not a bad idea. There was a 32-5 game, I believe Texas Tech beat somebody in college baseball over the weekend. How can there not be a three inning save in that game? the starter went 5 innings and like they didn't find a way to get a 3/4 inning save out of that. That's a failure. That is a absolute failure. So,
but we've got not a ton of concrete news, but games have started. So there's just whatever excitement's in the air. There's some fun, you know, the sort of baseline what stories will be falling. Some are very easy to guess. Dodgers signed a few people that they're very excited to see for play. Two of them, most notably, have not played in a game yet, but that's going to come up. We're going to catch you up on what they haven't done, what they're about to do, all of that after this.
I was just going to say, we are bursting at the seams with baseball news. So, you know, miscellaneous, of the miscellaneous variety. So, I just wanted to say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Commercial now, and then the other stuff. Bye.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This whole uniform fiasco is such a spring training, like it's not quite, you know, who's in the best shape of their life or whatever, but it's just so it's baseball. It's real players, you know, having taken pictures, but it's such a silly thing, but it's, I'm glad it's dominating headlines.
Yeah. It was just so like, there's just so many examples of like things being a little off, you know? Like some of the jerseys, like, well, so, Nike has been, partnered with, Major League since 2019. Fanatics is the company that distributes what Nike designs. Fanatics, if you do any sort of internet searching whatsoever, you can find people complaining on Twitter, like when they open Christmas presents, like shipments they get from Fanatics, you know, like the stuff that people buy for home. And it's like, oh, it's a Titans jersey, but it has like just one T, or like a T and an N or something. It just, you know, just off. Everything's off. There's been like a couple pictures of players. There was a Cubs player where his number is like off center on the back of his jersey. This is what the players are wearing. It's not like something in the gift shop, right? And that's the thing, like, Some of the stuff looks like it's in the gift shop there. You know, someone posted a before and after, like last year and this year, of J.P. Crawford, and the Crawford on the back is, you know, readable last year, like normal size. You know, maybe a little, you could even say possibly a little large, but now it's like very tiny on the back, and it's just very weird to see. But the main thing is the just the pants. Like it got so bad. Like just, I guess photo day also, I will say photo day is a big thing because you get all sorts of poses and everything is sort of pressed out to the world. So other people are noticing more and more. Also, in the last week or so, when everyone's reporting to camp, you know, the Dodgers and Padres are a little bit early. First full squad workouts were in full, like the beginning of last week. And people are like, what the hell is this shirt? You know, like what's the deal with my jersey? Why can't we customize our pants? Like they're getting like off the rack stuff rather than tailored. We got some beefy boys in baseball, and like, you know, it seems unprofessional is probably too strong, but part of it's like chintzy, I guess is a better word. It got so bad though that the players union is involved now. The executive director, Tony Clark, chimed in. This is from a piece from Jesse Rogers, ESPN. I've seen the quote. I'm not sure if he spoke to like a group of reporters or whatever, but I've seen a similar quote, and especially the one I'll get to at the end. He used this line, at least if he either used it multiple times or it was said in a group setting. But he said, quote, a lot of the rhetoric is confirmation that the pants are see-through. It's been an ongoing conversation where each day has yielded something new that doesn't seem to make as much sense as you would like it. And then Clark, this is the sentence that will stick with me for a while. Quote, universal concern is the pant. First of all, using pant as a singular word is just wonderful. Just absolutely wonderful. And it's just great. So the MLB, like the league office, has been in damage control. I think we mentioned on last week's episode how when they first last week put out that like strategic thing, like here, look at these new Nike Vapor jerseys. It's 28% more wicking or whatever. And then they had like a bunch of Nike clients and other players like doing videos like, aren't these jerseys great? It's pretty great. Like, and then so sure enough, their sort of strategy now appears to be gaslighting in a way. They're saying, look, the pants have always been see-through. Look at the lighting of photo day. And like Mark Feinsand, an MLB.com reporter, now good reporter, but also works for the mothership in this case. And he sort of shared a thing on Twitter. It was a picture of Reds players for the last 10 spring trainings trying to show that, look, these other years have see-through pants too, huh? Huh? Like you could sort of see, like, but it's, I don't know, it's not the same. But the big thing, like, none of those pictures were like, basically a very very clear view of Casey Smith's balls, like on the from the Giants, where he was. It was a rather like innocuous. Look, Alex Pavlovic, I think, was the one who put this on Instagram. Just sort of shared it in a story, and it was just a posing shot for photo day, and he's seated. Casey Schmidt is seated, and he just sort of shared it without like saying, "Hey, look at the balls!" Right? He didn't do that. He just like shared it as it was, and then everyone's like, "Oh my God, his balls are out!" You know, like you're just, and then there was so the MLB's like thing about it being like the lighting of photo day or whatever. It's ridiculous, but first day of spring, Thursday, the Dodgers and Padres were the only game. It was on ESPN and local TV as well. There was a shot that went around. I don't even know which player it was. It was on the Padres. But someone was fully bent over, and you could see more than the balls through the pants in this case. And that is not that's not a photo day lighting thing. So, yeah, it's weird, right? So, it's just a thing. It's one of those things. It's hard to trust the Major League Baseball as an entity, given like how they've like their messaging on the baseballs themselves over the years. you know, I'm not talking about the balls. I'm talking about a different kind of the balls in this case. You know, like, you know, basically when the balls were juiced, they're like, look, we're, even though they control, like they own the manufacturing, they control all of that. Like, look, we don't know what happened. It's not new. And then there was reporting that said there were different balls used, baseballs used. Like, I need to elongate it there. They're just not, I don't think you could trust what they say on this. So I would imagine this is something that's going to be fixed to some degree by the time the season starts. So it's just going to be fun to see how they sort of go about doing it and what are the changes that they make. Cause it has been pretty funny. I'll be honest, like just seeing some of the oddities of the game, but you know, that was also a distraction for a little bit because there weren't games. Now we have a weekend of games so far. We're recording on Sunday. Most teams have played 2 games. The Dodgers have played 4. Not so much the Glean yet. Like, they've only tied once. I mean, so, like, right, they're already a failure of a season right now. They've only tied 1 out of 4 possible games in spring. Look, they won the other 3 games. That's beside the point. But the only regulars to start 3 times so far are James Outman and Chris Taylor. Taylor played third base, shortstop, and second in those 3 games. So, like, you know, he's moving around a little bit. Non-roster invitee Kevin Padlow is tied for the team lead in home runs and steals. He's the only one with a steal, actually. He has 1 of each. So just remember this for next year when I ask you who led the Dodgers through the first weekend of spring training. No, there's no way I'm going to do that.
I mean, you might.
Yeah, that's true. So Shohei Ohtani hasn't played yet, but on Sunday afternoon after their game was over, the Dodgers did announce that Tuesday will be his first game, and that's against the White Sox at Camelback Ranch. Now, it was funny. The Dodgers put it out with a, you know, like on Twitter and then with a note to like, here's the link to buy tickets. But I thought I had heard that they were sold out. They've been sold out for a little bit. So, like, I don't know. Who knows what the – but it's just – it's been kind of a madhouse. Like, it looks like, you know, very, very popular, turns out, trying to see the Dodgers and their new guys. Another new guy, which you sort of alluded to at the opening, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. He could debut on Wednesday. As of right now, this is Sunday night, we have Ryan Yarbrough starting Monday when the Dodgers go to play the Rockies. Bobby Miller starting Tuesday. So they usually have like 2 days in advance in the game notes. And then I believe this came up in – so there's usually Dave Roberts meets like 2 times a day. In a scrum with the media once in the morning and then once usually after the game. This was in the morning scrum. This is from Bill Plunkett of the Orange County Register, quoting Roberts, quote, that's a good possibility. He's talking about Yamamoto starting Wednesday. I don't want to confirm it yet, but I like the way you're thinking. So, like, you know, that's basically Roberts as far as that's basically him saying, yes, it's going to be Wednesday. But they don't want to, you know, make it official just yet. In that same thing, he was talking about, you know, I think same sort of thing around Ohtani on Tuesday, and then that came to fruition by the end of the day. Last week, there was Cactus League Media Day, where they sort of do a get-together of all 15 teams. They also do it in Florida, but you basically have the manager and the GM there, and they set up, like, tables, and so basically all the reporters can get together, and then, like, if you're doing, you know, you cover one team, it's hard to see all the other teams. You can go there, you can get some other stuff from other teams like that. So they have that sort of setup. And during that setup last Tuesday, Roberts did say it was a, quote, safe bet that Yamamoto and Tyler Glasnow would start in some order the 2 games in South Korea. Now that's March 20th and 21st. So if we're just looking at the calendar, if Yamamoto starts Wednesday, that's the 28th of February, he has time to make 3 starts in camp before starting one of those games in South Korea. Glasnow can make 4 starts. That's because he started on Saturday. He made his debut. He ran into his pitch count, didn't quite finish the 2 innings he was scheduled for, inning and 2/3 he went, but he allowed like four hits and a walk. He did only allow one run because Mookie Betts made a nifty play where he sort of bird dogged the a runner at first base. There was a play to the it was first and third, fly ball short to short right. I believe it was Andy Páez threw home, and then it was cut off. But the guy on first base drifted too far off, and Betts at second base came in behind him, got the throw, and sort of tagged him out. So he got a nice double play out of that. But Glasnow said after the start on Sportsnet LA, health-wise, he felt fine. The stuff was good. But, quote, as far as execution, not the best. So, but he didn't seem too concerned about it. But if you look at, like, the timing, right, with his four starts, so two innings that day are almost two innings. Next inning, next time out, probably three, next four, next five. So he'll be fine, like built up for the South Korea series. The other newsy type thing, and this is the very loosest definition of this, is Walker Buehler is unlikely to pitch in a Cactus League game, Dave Roberts said. We already knew Buehler's going to start the season on the IL. He's on an innings limit. On Sunday, this is from Jack Harris at the LA Times, basically that Buehler hasn't pitched to hitters yet. In like live batting practice or anything, so he's not quite ready to you know go yet. This is what Robert said, quote, he's still kind of in that, it's not rehab mode, but he's got to get to the point where you're getting hitters out. He's not quite there yet. So it seemed like early May was always like the more reasonable target for Buehler anyway to return, and that this timeline kind of lines up with that. So essentially, if you look at it, if he's not starting in the Cactus League, that basically means his spring training starts either at the very end of March or the very start of April, or roughly around there. So then you figure he probably needs 4 to 5 starts to build up. So he'll probably be ready May-ish, you know, that kind of time. So who knows? That's kind of it in Dodgers camp. I would say there was a lot of old friend news, though, over the last week, including I applaud you for using the do not disturb on your text messages, because there was a late night one that came in on Saturday night for you. It was late for us in the West Coast, and you're 2 hours later.
I was, in fact, not woken up by that. I'm proud of myself.
I am too. Friend of the show. Member of the show, questioner of the show, Craig Minami.
questioner of the show. He's a skeptic, known podcast skeptic. Yeah,
that's right. He's the one who comes in and always has complaints like, why, you know, these two guys sound like idiots. Oh, geez, all right. Anyway, so Cody Bellinger signed with the Cubs. It's kind of absurd that how many like unsigned free agents there still are now. The Boris Four, as they're calling him. And then there's also like JD Martinez. I'll get to him in a second. He's also Boris. But if you remember back at the beginning of the offseason in MLB Trade Rumors, they put in like a contract prediction in their top 50 free agents. And the prediction for Cody Bellinger, who is about as volatile of a hitter as you could find, 12 years, $264 million. Didn't quite get that. 3 years, $80 million. Jeff Passan was the first report. This was 11:14 Pacific. That's when Craig, or probably a minute or two after that, sent the text. So we're talking 1:15 your time, and you just slept right through it. I'm proud of you. But there's opt-outs after each of the first 2 years. So he gets $30 million in each of the first 2 years, then $20 for the last year. So you're probably looking, it's like 2 years, $60 million, basically, and then he'll figure out what he wants to do. He could, if he has a good year, he could opt out after next year. But like, you know, after like seeing what he went through, this, I don't know. Who knows? It seems like hard to walk away from that next $30 million, right? Like that's a big number. There's other news that are much smaller deals. Ahmed Rosario signed with the Rays. He got a major league deal, 1 year, $1.5 million. Seems pretty low. Like mm-hmm. He can earn up to $500,000 in bonuses. So it's not like it's like super incentive laden or anything. David Peralta, he signed a minor league deal with the Cubs. He had elbow surgery in October. That I'm sure that played into that. Kike Hernandez is reportedly nearing a decision. It was weird how it was reported. Like on Friday, I think, Mark Feinsand of MLB.com tweeted out, Kike Hernandez is expected to make his decision by Sunday or Monday. And it's like, but then, okay, what are the teams, right? And then Saturday night, Ken Rosenthal at The Athletic said that he's down to four teams. It's the Padres, Giants, Angels, and the Twins. So, like, you're basically, like, the California corridor, the non-Dodger California corridor minus A's, and the Twins. So we'll see what happens there. I mentioned J.D. Martinez is still on the market. It sort of came up this week when the Giants signed Jorge Soler for 3 years and $42 million. Now, Soler can play the outfield. Martinez really can't, but, you know, it's also a lot of DH there, too. The Giants were in on him, reportedly offered him 1 year, $14 million. I saw Feinsand report this. I think Bob Nightingale reported this. And then also, like, Alex Pavlovic of the NBC Sports Bay Area said the Giants, like, balked at the counter. I think Martinez wanted, like, $20 million, or I don't know if that was his actual counter, but Giants were like, no, it's a little too rich. So then they didn't they balked there. So they weren't able to make a deal. But the big news, Hyunjin Ryu, back to the KBO with the Hanwha Eagles. So he's getting around $12.7 million total. It was first reported as a 4-year deal. He's going to be the highest paid player in the league, I believe. But they do have like a I don't know if they call it a salary cap, but it is a salary cap basically. And they're making it an 8-year deal just to get around that, basically.
Some old NHL stuff going on.
Yeah, exactly. So, because he's 37, so he's not pitching until he's 44, right?
Like
I wouldn't put it past him. But look, I'm gonna put it past him. It would be funny to see how. I haven't seen what the breakdown is. Like, if he gets like almost all of it in the first 4 years, and then it's like minuscule for the last four or whatever. That's more NHL style, right? The Ilya Kovalchuk or whatever those deals were that got sort of canceled. But speaking of some old friends, Andre Ethier has been in Dodgers camp. He's been working with Miguel Vargas, for instance, playing left field, which is new to Vargas. Ethier told Dylan Hernandez.
Sounds like, yeah, Andre. He's playing left field? One, not new to Ethier, two. All right. Get him back in there.
Ethier did say in the piece by Dylan Hernandez of the LA Times that he said he misses it. And he kind of just wants one more at bat, you know. But he said so. He remembered like getting advice from Sean Green, who was a teammate at the time. Or you know what? I'm trying to think. They didn't. There was maybe it was after because I think they traded him by the time Ethier came up, or they got him. So yeah. And then also Eric Caro, same thing. Already no longer playing, but sort of, you know, they gave him advice or whatever. And this is what he's doing. So this is from Ethier, quote. When you're battling, some of the guys out here, it's important just to find somebody to be a confidant and maybe even a little encouraging to say, I'm here pulling for you. So that's cool. Also, on Sunday, it was reported Matt Kemp
will also join back together. Let's go.
So you're thinking of this, right? Ethier's going to be 42 in April. Kemp is 39 already. They still got something in them. Like, yeah. I'm saying, those guys, ring David Freese just to see what's up. Like, you know, you never know. He's early 40s. So he's going to be advisory role. Not really sure what's going to happen. Bob Nightingale reported, I think, first on Sunday morning. Bobby Nardaya had an article about it, too. Dave Roberts addressed it. I saw in the sort of video, the short post-game scrum. He's like, yeah, he was a great Dodger. He didn't really say much about it, but he did, you know, confirm it. My other point before, as more of a palate cleanser before I get into trivia, is that Eddie Murray turned 68 years old on Saturday. In his final 68 at-bats in 1990, he had 28 hits. That's .412 clip. Raised his batting average 12 points over the final 3 weeks of the season. He finished at .330, which led the major leagues that year, but he didn't win a batting title because life is unfair. Speaking of unfair, here's a trivia question for you, Jacob Birch. So Shohei Ohtani, when he makes his spring debut this week, he's expected to bat third behind Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman. We'll find out officially Tuesday. So who holds the Los Angeles Dodgers record for most plate appearances with runners on base in one season?
I'll take a stab after this.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office.
More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. Ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Who has the most plate appearances with runners on base? Right?
Yeah, that's right. I'll give you, before you guess, I will say just as a setup. So Dodgers, number three hitters in 2023, they had 396 plate appearances with runners on base. 287 of those were by Will Smith, who was a catcher, and he only started 120 games. That included some DH starts. So this is the sort of baseline you're working with, right? Like Ohtani, yeah, presumably going to play a lot more. But Ohtani, over the last 3 years with the Angels, now different. He wasn't following Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman. He averaged over the last 3 years 145 starts and only averaged 273 plate appearances with runners in scoring position, or runners on base, excuse me, the last 3 years. So last year, Mookie Betts or Freddie Freeman was fifth. Mookie Betts was sixth in on base percentage. Ohtani was second, which is funny. So Zips this year projects Freeman and Betts to finish sixth and seventh in the majors in OBP. Steamer has them fifth and tenth. So that's sort of my baseline for this to you, to give you sort of an idea of the scale.
Yeah. Okay. So the Dodgers offenses have been the best Dodger offenses over the last few years. So I'm going to start very recent.
Okay. I'll give you another hint is, as a team, they've been great, but they also haven't had a ton of guys playing every day.
That's fair. Yeah. So maybe I won't do that. Mm-hmm. And that makes me bat. So let's go with... there's too many names I could name. So I'm going to give myself three strikes. Steve Garvey.
That's a good place to start. So he's actually second. In 1975, 371 plate appearances. Now, he also shows up on this list 10th, 13th, 19th, 23rd, and 25th, just in the top 25. So he's, you know, that's a good guess, because he was an everyday guy in a spot in the order that would be conducive to that.
Pedro Guerrero.
I like where your head's at. So his most was 336 in 1982. That is tied for 15th.
All right. My last guess. Mike Piazza.
Mike Piazza.
Catching thing probably cost me there.
No, but he caught like every almost you know, he caught a lot. It was pretty wild. Wow, he's not. I mean, also, he wasn't exactly like following, you know, greatness. So, wow, this is terrible. He's tied for 46th, his best season, 1996, 314 times. I will, before I give you the answer, I will tell you the reason I brought this up because Cody Bellinger is the one I would think of, played mostly every day in 2019. But that year he batted with, oh God, I had it here in front of me.
I'm just going to say real quick, if it was Cody Bellinger and you gave me that hint that, they haven't had a lot of guys recently.
Right, I'm just giving you, putting you off the scent. That'd be so messed up. So Cody Bellinger, 319 plate appearances with runners on in 2019. That's 39th in LA Dodger history. So the only people in the top 25 in the since 2000 are Sean Green is third, 2,353. Matt Kemp in 2011 is 8th, 347. Sean Green again, 2002, 339. Sean Green in 2001, 337. And then Eric Karros in 2000, 336. That's it for 2000s on these. The number one is the Dodgers RBI single season leader, Tommy Davis, who drove in 152 runs in 1962. He batted 374 times with runners on base. That's it.
My next two guesses would have been Sheffield, who is 69th on the list.
Yeah.
And Sean Green after that. So
yeah, and Sean Green is the most prolific recent guy in the
top. Yeah, and I don't Tommy Davis was probably not going to be a guess. So right. Now I might have gotten to the point where I said a Davis because that covers a lot of ground.
Yeah, and like Willie Davis hit. They called him Three Dog. He didn't. Well, so like, Maury Wills was leading off, so he was either second or third, right?
Well,
so
Willie
like,
Davis is 12th on this list,
right?
And 44th.
So Eddie Murray is fifth, tied with Wes Parker. Just as a note, the top two is ridiculous enough. This is if Otani's third, but the top three. So like, it's going to be still like probably Will Smith fourth. Or, you know, at times maybe Teoscar Hernandez or whatever. That spot also is going to be, like, ridiculous because you're basically following, like, three guys who just are all getting on base a lot if they're not driving in their own runs. But, like, so one of my favorite individual seasons ever, non-Dodger related. So Joe Carter drove in 100 runs 10 times in a 12-year span. He was an above-average hitter in his career. One of his worst seasons came with the Padres in 1990. There was a lot of awesome trades back in the day. He came from from Cleveland to San Diego in the trade that were both Alomars involved going to Cleveland in that because the Padres had them both. He goes to San Diego in 1990. He hit 232. 290, 391. That's an 85 OPS plus. That's the second worst of his career. He's still driven 115 runs. good for third in the majors. He greatly benefited because on most days he's hitting behind in the top three of the Padres lineup, which was Bip Roberts, who had a 375 OBP that year. Tony Gwynn, 357. Remember, this is at the time still good, and he's Tony Gwynn. And Jack Clark, 441, hitting third. And so Carter batted 361 times with runners on base, the most in the majors that season. So he was definitely getting the boost there. So you look now, like, you know, I don't know if you're like a fantasy player or something, but if you have like the over on like Will Smith or Teoscar Hernandez, like RBIs or something, I don't know what their numbers are. But that just seems like there's going to be a lot of situations. But also, like, I think Mike Petriello wrote about this a couple weeks back at MLB.com. Basically, how Otani specifically is going to benefit. He's going to be batting with more runners on than he ever did with the Angels. So he's going to probably do even more damage. Like, so that's going to be something to watch. Yeah. Okay. So no, he wasn't traded. Oh, wow. I got mixed up. All right. So he was traded, by Cleveland to San Diego for Sandy Alomar, Carlos Baerga, and Chris James. Chris James, the lesser of those three. Then he was traded with Roberto Alomar a year later to the Blue Jays for Tony Fernandez and Fred McGriff. There were some awesome trades back in the day, man. It was just crazy. So that was his only year in San Diego. It was like one of the worst years of his career, and he still like drove in 115 runs because that's awesome.
Hey. Uh-huh. Hey, yeah. Guess what?
No, what are you going to tell me?
It's time for
Questions from Craig. We love them.
Trivia and other questions.
We love it. I'm always late on that.
Here we go. You ready?
Yep.
I peeked ahead at the food question. 2024 is the 10th anniversary of Clayton Kershaw's MVP and Cy Young Award winning 2014 season. So this week's trivia is related to that great season from Kershaw. Kershaw led all National League pitchers with 7.7 BWAR. Can Eric name the other three NL pitchers with 6.1 or more BWAR in 2014?
Why do you say WAR?
War. I don't know.
No.
It's like GWAR, you know, the weird metal band, but BWAR.
I will point out 2014 also the last year where the Dodgers started overseas early and then came back. But that's when Kershaw got hurt and then he missed a little bit, but he came back. He was still really great. And 6.1 in 2014 mm-hmm. in the National League. So at this point, all right. I'm just trying to think here. Let's go with Adam Wainwright.
Adam Wainwright had 6.1 on the dot.
Okay, now I'm just trying to think of the timing of this. So they were gone. Yeah, 2014. Okay, so... this is the middle of the Giants titles. Lincecum's already post-saying. So, okay. Madison Bumgarner?
Madison Bumgarner only did a 3.7 that year.
Hmm. Yeah, but he was like at least three in the playoffs. No, I'm just kidding. wait, what about Matt Cain?
No. Not even on my short list.
I'm just trying to. I'm having a hard time like piecing together the rest of the league at that point. You know, because like 2012 was like the R.A. Dickey one off. Kershaw barely beat like Roy Halladay in 2011. But then, like, is Roy Halladay still really good in 2014? Like, I don't know. I thought that was, like... I'll just say Roy Halladay just to end it, because I don't know.
Nope.
Yeah.
There is an old friend on here, sort of, kind of.
Nope.
Okay. Yeah. Johnny Cueto had a 6.6.
Cueto, nice, yeah.
And Cole Hamels with a 6.4.
You know what? You're right. He is an old friend.
Kershaw's 857 whip in 2014 is in the top 10 of all whips since 1920. Five of the pitchers on the list are in the Hall of Fame. Can Eric name them?
Sure. Pedro?
Yes. 737. Thank you.
I'm trying to think. So, Koufax... I think just got under.
Yes.
And then let's go with Bob Gibson to
853.
So I need one more.
Two more.
What?
You've named Koufax, Gibson, and Pedro. There are more.
That's all I named? Okay.
Right?
Trying to do sleight of hand on you. No. What about Maddox?
Maddox with an 8-11.
Man. Okay. Oh boy. Yeah, this is Zach Greinke's 2015. No, he's not in the Hall of Fame.
Correct. Yeah, I was about to say yes, he's, correct. Yes. But.
But he will be. No, yeah. Come back to me. No, just kidding. Let's see. I'm just trying to think of like. What about a? Let's just go one of the crazy Roger Clemens. Nope, he's not in the Hall of Fame. this is fun. Okay. A low whip guy in the Hall of Fame. Hold on. Let's go. I'm not even that confident in this, but Tom Seaver.
Juan Marichal.
Nice.
The only player to have two to be on here twice is Justin Verlander, by the way. There you go. Clayton Kershaw joined Don Newcomb and Sandy Koufax when he was awarded both the Cy Young Award and Most Valuable Player Award in the same season. There is one other pitcher in Dodger franchise history who has been named MVP. Can Eric name that pitcher?
Just as an aside for the last question, so I finally got around to getting some 2024 Topps baseball cards. They just came out recently. And in Series 1, one of the cards is like the Dodgers like team card, and on the back it has like some information about the season and like some of the stats leaders. It's like wins, strikeouts, and then ERA, and it says no qualifier. It's such a bummer. It's so sad. Okay, so this is so they used to award MVPs so sparingly. Like some years they did, some years they're like, who knows? The only one I can think of is Dazzy Vance.
I was about to say, like in the Zach Wheat era of pitchers, when in doubt, just guess Dazzy Vance. Yeah.
So and, the funny, so right.
1924, by the way.
Speaking of WH guys, Whit Wyatt, I think it was 1941 because this came up last year when Freeman and Betts were or Betts 2, Freeman 3 when they were top three. 1941, the Dodgers had the top three finishers. It was Dolph Camilli, who was the first baseman, finished first. And I can't remember. I think it was Pete Reiser, center fielder, second, and Whit Wyatt was third, the pitcher. So like that's what he was in my head, and I'm like, oh, he didn't win one. Like I don't know. So yeah.
Kershaw had an 181 FIP.
Yeah,
there are only five pitchers.
I'm gonna start that.
Who had a better FIP since 1920, and two of them have not already been mentioned in this trivia. Can Eric name them?
Okay. Oh, wait. I said Maddox in the other one, right?
You did.
That. Okay. So, 181 FIP. And two of them haven't been mentioned.
And that's the two, Craig wants you the name. The ones that have already been mentioned, I'll just say, are Pedro, Bob Gibson, Dazzy Vance, and Sandy Koufax.
And Maddox, right?
No, Maddox is not on this.
I see. I got you. Okay. Yeah. And our... Okay. 181 FIP. I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around that. What about... Um... So, like, even the other ones I mentioned. Okay. I don't know what this person's FIP was. Has to be. No. Okay, this is since 1920. Is it Bob Feller?
Nope. There's two names. Reminder. And I'll give you years if you need it.
Right. it's not just Bob Feller twice. I'm having a hard... What about... I don't even have that. Dwight Gooden.
Dwight Gooden is one of them in 1984, actually.
84? Wow. That's his rookie year. Oh, because I think he struck out like... I want to say 292. Is that right? If that's right, I'm taking the headphones off.
I'm checking real quick. I'm scrolling down the awards. 276. Get out. You're stuck with me.
All right, good. That's where I want to finish the podcast. Can you give me the year on the other one?
2021.
What? okay, so... Oh, no. That's Corbin Burns.
Correct.
Yeah. I was... yeah, good. I like that.
Kershaw had a 181... wait, I already read that. That's it. Sorry, I was about to give you the same question. I bet.
I got
how
this
well
one.
Will you do? Yeah. you did good. Yeah. I might have to encourage... I like the... there's only one answer. I like making sure there's one or two of them in there.
Yeah.
And especially if the answer is Zach Wieter.
That's obviously...
Chris Taylor's 2023 was a slight improvement over 2022, but his overall numbers have gone down in the last three seasons. With 2 years and a club option for 2026 left on his contract, what role do you see Taylor having for this year's team?
So I sort of alluded to that in when we talked about just, it's, you know, four games in. He's already started at short, second and third. I would imagine he's going to see some time in the outfield. I think he's just going to be extra guy, like occasionally starting against righties or lefties, excuse me.
And I'm kind of excited for him to enter back into this role because that was how much of his original value came from, is he was not like the kind of regular left fielder, you know, backup center field. He was like, and yet he still kind of played every day. And I think that might be a little bit less pronounced with the amount of kind of platoon options going on. But yeah, just that kind of glue guy, you know, sort of. Third on the depth chart at every position.
Yeah, there's the other factor of, so Max Muncy has not hit lefties well the last 2 years. He has in his career, but he hasn't been good the last 2 years. He homered against a lefty on Sunday, the day we're recording this, in spring training, for what it's worth. And I'm sure he's going to get some rope. But you could see a scenario where maybe some of Taylor's playing time comes at third when he starts against some lefties. You know, to sit months here or whatever. I think he's going to mix around. So you have to figure too, like, Teoscar Hernandez is going to play mostly every day. James Outman's going to play most days. Manuel Margot is going to, like, split time with Jason Hayward, but he's also going to probably spell James Outman at times. So, like, how many other starting opportunities are there for Taylor in the outfield? There might be some, you know, there always pops up. But, like, I think they're just going to have to fit him in. Like, but I think last year he was doing his best. Now, you can't only start him against lefties, right? Like, you just can't. It's not a viable way to like, get any sort of traction or whatever. So,
but it's also kind of a valuable role off the bench when they, like, they platoon a guy, especially, say, against a lefty, and then they kind of want to take him out. Chris Taylor can be a guy that just kind of sticks around and plugs the holes as needed.
Oh, right.
As they make maneuver. Those roster jobs. Yeah.
They, like, you know, just like the normal lineup, like against a righty, right? There's six lefties. Now, Freeman and Ohtani are fixtures. Muncy is close to being a fixture. Hayward is platoon. But then there's also Lux and Outman and Lux, too. So, like, Lux, they're not going to push. He's going to play most days, but but I don't think they want to. They don't expect like 150 games out of him, so he'll get days off. But I think Miguel Rojas is going to be the fill in. It's short, it's just for the defense and all that. But yeah, like you said, it could be an instance where they might have to pinch hit late for Rojas in that game or something. You know, like and then that's maybe Taylor's spot, even if it's, you know, righty for righty, whatever. But.
In 2021, Shohei Ohtani hit his spring training career high of 5 home runs. For the contest, predict the number of home runs Ohtani will hit in the Cactus League, Korea, and the California Exhibition Series. When is that?
What?
The California what? Exhibition Games?
That's a freeway series. That's the 24th to the 26th.
It's right after Korea.
Yeah.
That's confusing.
Yeah,
I think I remember going, okay, yeah, that sort of makes sense, and then moving on, and now I'm like coming back like, wait a minute, that's really weird.
it's very weird.
Did they do that? Is that what happened in Australia?
Yep.
Man, I do not remember that. So
yep. So that was funny because that was when the season started on a Sunday only for like two teams, so they go to Australia. Then they had about a week till the season started. Then the Dodgers played the Padres on the opening Sunday night. So there was a time. So 27 major league teams entered Monday with 0 games played. The Dodgers had 3, the Diamondbacks had 2, and the Padres had 1. So like the Dodgers had this weird head start. But no, it's very weird. So just to get back to Craig's question here, the Dodgers have already played 4 games. He's not playing Monday, so he'll have 19 or really, I mean, and he's not going to play all of them, but there's going to be 18 opportunities for him to play in domestic spring training. One of the days is a split squad day. So we've seen Ohtani do a lot of stuff. I don't think he's going to be able to play 2 places at once. I'm not putting it past him, but I'm just saying it's unlikely. But then they also play, 2 practice games, one against Kai Woom and the other against the Korea national team, a couple days before the regular season game. So like, you know, if we're counting that, so we're talking.
And so to be clear, I think he's not including the games that count in Korea.
He's not. There's two.
Yeah, practices. Clarifying because that kind of blew by me.
Yeah, so there's going to be 20 chances for him to play. Now, Ohtani said, I think Roberts said this, Ohtani said, like, clarified or like, confirmed, he needs about 50 at-bats to be ready for Korea. So ignoring the freeway series for a second, because that's not part of this. But that also is not just 50 at-bats in Cactus League games. He's going to also, some days, play on the backfields. Like, you know how they do... There's like minor league games on the backfields, and then you can go down there, but because you're Johnny Major Leaguer, you get to bat at the start of every inning because it's weird. Who cares? And so you can get like 7 at bats in one day if you need it. So I don't necessarily think he's going to play a ton of Cactus League games. You got to figure he'll probably play both. I would imagine he'll play both of the practice games in Korea because those are more showcasey type things, right? Like, you know.
Right.
So we're guessing the home runs. I'll just say 4.
That's what I was gonna say.
All right, you want me to do a different one? You want
no,
4?
No, no. I'll be the hater for once.
But
3.
Remember, this also counts. The freeway series. So.
3. There you go.
All right. So I say 4. You say 3. Okay.
Ruzdar Gratterall is a unique pitcher. Last year, he combined for a 1.20 ERA with 6.4 strikeouts per 9. Since 1995, only 4 other pitchers had seasons comparable with a minimum of 50 innings pitched with those stats. Do you think Gratterall can continue to be successful with a strikeout rate trending down?
So I just want to point out the table that Craig sent. So Gratterall had a 3.63 ERA plus, which is ridiculous. But the other pitchers on this list, if you want to get really downs on Gratterall. The other names here are Brad Ziegler, Clay Meredith, Shigetoshi Hasegawa, and Scott Downs are the sort of seasons that Craig has identified in the, since 95. Low strikeouts, high, super low ERA. I am not super worried about Gratterall strikeout rate. It is a thing. Like, it's a low strikeout rate. It's like it was under 20% last year. But he also gets, like, really bad swings, and he doesn't really give up a ton of, like, barrels or, you know, a little bit of hard hit, but not – they're getting weird swings off him. So that's not a problem. His expected ERA was 306 last year. It was top 9% in baseball. He was in the twos in expected ERA in 2020 and 2022. I would say his one bad year was 2021, and that was where he came to camp, like, out of shape, where Roberts, like, multiple times that season, he's like, alluded to, he's like, you know, some, you know, you gotta, he was very vague about it, but it was like, you gotta come in ready and, you know, be ready. And he was not ready. And so he spent a lot of time in the minors that year. I will say, if there's one thing to potentially, that could help his strikeout rate, is his slider. He throws it, that's his second most prolific pitch. But it was like minus -2 in run value last year. It was plus +11 the previous three seasons. I'm going off Baseball Savant for that. That's his best strikeout pitch. So if you get that going again, his strikeout rate will go up. And even, like, he's not putting up a 120 ERA this year, right? Like, but he could be in the twos and, like, but, like, a, perhaps a more dominant in the twos if you look at the other numbers. So, like, I'm not really worried at all about his strikeout rate.
Before I knew it was a staple in Chinese restaurants, we had fried rice at home. While you can go out and get fried rice with all kinds of proteins, I am still partial to having it made with bacon, eggs, celery, and onion. Do you use leftover rice in this way, or does the necessity of using eggs... spoiler alert for me. Dieter making this comfort food. Yeah, it just never... We didn't get Chinese food often enough to enter the nostalgia area to where, even though I don't want egg, I'm going to make it work. It's just not been a dish on my radar. Melissa loves it.
Yeah. I like fried rice. I don't think I've ever made it at home. I like the
you might have, but you forgot. No, I like this drunken stupor.
You know what? Because I'm thinking, was it drunken noodles or was it drunken fried rice? No, I don't think I've made it. So it's one of those things where I will, if I'm making rice at home, I will just go rice cooker, just usually white rice. Sometimes I'll have like a rice-a-roni at the ready or something, that sort of thing, or whatever, like that sort of thing. But I don't,
it's the San Francisco treat.
Look, I know. Yeah. I'll get some store brands, whatever's on sale. I just don't go the extra mile on that. Fried rice is a thing where I used to get that all the time, like at like a to-go Chinese restaurant or sit down, you know, whatever. But then like over the, like I morphed into more, I like the noodles more than if I'm going out. But like, if I get fried rice, it's usually going out, right? But I'm also more prone to get noodles when I go out. So like, it's, I don't know. Like, but yeah, I almost never have made it at home, but I do like it. I will eat it. Like, it's not something I go out of my way to make. Yeah.
Here we go.
Well, if you're enjoying your fried rice or white rice or noodles, however you're, whatever you're eating, I hope you had a good time listening to the three inning save. I am Eric Steven.
The Thai podcast.
No, we're talking about Chinese food, not
the Thai. Even making a pun here. I didn't even realize the Thai podcast.
I like it. That's right. For now, we're the Tide podcast.
Maybe we can get a sponsorship deal from the good people at Tide.
Oh, Tide. Okay.
Yeah, Tide Pod.
Wow.
Yeah, we could just be the Tide Pod. There we go. Yeah,
you blew my mind. Well, Brian Salvatore is the producer who makes whatever this is sound decent. And thank you to Craig Manami for the questions. And thank you to Craig for always making us hungry at the end of every episode. We will talk to you next week. Thanks for listening, everybody.